Welcome back to the final half hour of Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. I'm Libby Collins. John McCure's here with me this morning.
I love it. I love being here with you.
And, well, listen, you're going to like this even better because joining us is former Congressman Scott Klug. He, of course, has a podcast. It's called Lost in the Middle. And I know as we're getting closer to this election in November, Scott, you've got more to say about what's going to happen. First of all, good morning.
Morning, Libby. Hi, John.
Hey, thank you, Congressman.
How do you feel after watching the DNC this past week?
Oh, I thought the Democrats had a great convention, and I thought she had a very solid speech. And from my point of view, she gets huge applause for simply keeping it to 45 minutes. Because when I was in office, I was there for Bill Clinton's State of the Union addresses, which sometimes went longer than 2 hours. So, I think. As somebody who's not necessarily a fan of the ticket, I still have to give him high marks for the way they handled it.
Well, John, you had something.
I want to ask you, Congressman, about Lost in the Middle kind of describes you. And you have the reputation of, as being somebody who would work across aisles and get things done. In the RNC in Milwaukee and the DNC in Chicago, and I was at both, we did our show from both, the entire run of each. They all talk about unity and coming together. But it seems like it's about unity within the party and coming together within the party. Even Michelle Obama took shots at the Trump administration. How do we get to where we're coming together as a country and not just coming together either as a group of red or a group of blue?
Oh, sure. I can cover that in the next 45 seconds.
We'll give you a minute and a half.
Well, I think here's the key thing. I think one thing we need to figure out is, you know, politics has always been rough and tumble. I mean, if you go back and look at our founding fathers, you know, Hamilton was a play basically on one of the founding fathers who got shot in a fight with one of the other founding fathers. But I think the fundamental, you know, basis of American politics and the American system is the ability to disagree, but to respect somebody else's opinion. And that's what we've seen the loss. And there's a million reasons for it. I mean, part of the problem in the House is redistricting. There is no center. There's no moderate Republicans or moderate Democrats left. A big part of it is social media. A big part of it, I think, is traditional media, which struggles to find subscribers and viewers. And so they go down the rabbit hole that'll get people to subscribe. I think all those things blend together. And, you know, I think if you look at what goes on in Washington or goes on in those conventions, it has very little to do with what goes on in normal people's lives. And look, you know, for some reason, this is accepted behavior in political circles. I mean, you can't act this way to other people at PMJ. You can't act this way if you drop in at church on a Sunday morning. You can't do that when you go see your kids' school teachers for conferences. You sure as hell can't do it at your own breakfast table. But for some reason, this kind of behavior has become accepted in American politics. And I think most people, myself included, are just sick of it.
You know what, and John, I think you made this point to me the other day. There were 15,000 journalists at the DNC, only 5,000 at the RNC. Why do you think there was such a disparity on that, Scott?
Oh, I mean, I think back to my earlier point. You know, I don't ever think that individual journalists slant stories. I mean, I'm still active in the journalism school at Northwestern where I went to. Most reporters I know are as persnickety about facts as they've always been. But I think it's a sense of the worldview. And, you know, if you look, there was a national study done by Nate Silver, who's had a long-standing poll thing and made his way in doing poll forecasting like we may talk about. Only 6% of journalists self-describe as Republicans. If you saw the column from the NPR, where in the national headquarters of NPR, one of their columnists went and looked at, saw where people registered, and you can do that in a lot of states. You have to register either as a Republican or a Democrat, and Virginia and Maryland are two of those. There was not a single Republican in the NPR newsroom. So I think it's really an echo chamber, and I think it reflects sort of the bias of the press to a large degree. I mean, I think they gave Trump fair coverage, but it seemed triumphant to me in Chicago and completely out of perspective. And before I called in, I was reading today's Washington Post, and they have this little tagline in the corner that says, "Democracy dies in darkness." I mean, could anything be more pretentious or more smug? And I think that's why a lot of people get extraordinarily frustrated with the media.
It's 9:42. Scott, stick with us. I got to ask you, what RFK's endorsement of Donald Trump and how it will affect the race, or will it affect it? And also, we're going to get into polls. It's all ahead of Wisconsin Weekend Morning News, and we have 80 degrees at WTMJ. It's going to get up to the mid-90s today. It's 9:45. Brewers beat the A's yesterday, 9-5. We've got coverage beginning today at 2 o'clock with Dominic Catronio.
Is that Klug's music?
It must be.
That's Klug's walk-up music?
Yeah. You getting, yeah. Getting back into politics anytime soon, Scott?
Yeah. My ringtone on my phone is James Brown, which I think is much more applicable, so I'll stick with that.
Hey, let's talk about RFK. Did you have that on your bingo card, that he was going to come out with a Trump endorsement?
No, nor do I think it makes a smattering of difference. I mean, you know, maybe if the race turns down to be, you know, 187 votes, it could, but I just don't think he's ever had much momentum. They never had any organization. He was on such few state ballots that he really never seemed to go anywhere. So I'm surprised he sort of stuck around as long as he did. I think this is a graceful way for him to exit. I just don't think it really matters much in the race, no more so than if Cornell West suddenly endorsed Kamala Harris. I mean, it's third-party candidates at the fringes, and since Perot in the 90s, none of the third parties have really had much traction whatsoever.
Scott, I know we're going to talk about polling, and the polling has been a disaster in some instances, but the polling in Wisconsin shows he's at 5%, and if it's as close as in the past, national stuff, I think it doesn't matter, but could it matter in a couple individual battleground states if it's literally less than 25,000 votes, like in a state like Wisconsin?
Sure, it could. But I think what you see historically in third party runs like this is when people actually walk into the poll and decide if it's going to be a wasted vote, they usually vote for one of the mainstream candidates or they don't vote. So I'm not sure how many of the Kennedy people who were 5% would really have ever voted for him. I suspect it'll probably split in both ways. I mean, he seemed to have this sort of strange politics that went so far to the right, it sort of, you know, joined hands on the far left. And I'm just not sure how much that group will vote, how much they'll stick with it, and if Kennedy's endorsement of Trump will even make a difference. Now, maybe I'll be wrong. I mean, you know, it's interesting when people point to Al Gore's loss to George W. Bush, they all point to Florida because Nader, I think, got, you know, I don't know what the number was, 8,000, 9,000 votes, whatever it is. And so the Democrats will always say, well, Ralph Nader cost Al Gore Florida. But if you look, there were four other parties, the Libertarians, the American Conservative Party, that got just as many votes as Ralph Nader did. And so there's always been a third party sort of undercurrent in American politics. But like I said earlier, aside from Perot in the 90s, it's really been not been much to write home about.
Scott, in your podcast, Lost in the Middle, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you this morning. You talk quite a bit about polling and how it can be deceptive. What have you found through the years, and you know, going back, for example, to 2016?
Well, you have to go back even earlier than that. I mean, this problem first surfaced, which is, I think, it's still an issue that has a lot of Democratic pollsters concerned with what were called the Quiet Tories. So the Tories are the Conservative Party in the UK, and they began to discover that in a lot of cases, Tories weren't responding to polling questions from anyone. They would refuse to answer. In some cases, they'd lie just to sort of screw with the pollsters who they saw as part of the media they didn't like very much. And it's been a continuing problem in Britain. I mean, they were completely wrong on the Brexit vote. They were wrong on whether Scotland would leave the United Kingdom. They were even wrong this spring on the most recent parliamentary elections in England, where they got the winning party right, but they badly underestimated the British Liberal Democrats and the British Reform Party. So if you look in the U.S., in 16 it was bad, and then in 20 we were all told the pollsters got it right. Yeah, I'll just point to two things. The projections going in were that Biden was going to win North Carolina and going to win Georgia, and it would be a very early election night. And instead, we were all up till, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning trying to figure out what was going on in Nevada because Biden didn't win those. And even more telling, there were 7 Senate races in the consensus of pollsters that were flat wrong, which means in some cases, Democrats probably had seats they were counting on they weren't close to. In other situations, Republicans could have had races they might have won if they'd reallocated resources there. So I'm really skeptical about this. And I think what you see now, it used to be old-fashioned landline pollsters. And I've got a landline just because my cable system in Madison throws it in along with computer service and regular cable TV, but nobody uses them. So they've got to use what landlines they can find, augmented by online polling, augmented by text polling, and they will freely admit they have to do some calculation of trying to guess what the underreporting is for Republicans and conservatives. And it's a hunch. And in some cases, it worked in 2020. And in some states, they were dead wrong. And, you know, the election, you know, we just did a story in Lost in the Middle on the seven counties that'll decide the election. So there's 3,700 counties in the country. It's going to come down to the same six, seven, eight states we can all predict. And in those six, seven, eight states, it's probably seven counties. One of which, interestingly, is Dane County, because it has crazy turnout. In 2020, the turnout rate in Dane County was 90%, which actually seems hard to believe, but that's the number. And that's the number the Democrats will have to hit in order to win Wisconsin. And I look, you know, down the road for me at the University of Wisconsin and ask, will students show up this time? Will there be a protest vote against Gaza? Will there be a big protest vote against Gaza in Michigan, where there's a large Arab community around Michigan? So I think people have to keep in mind that any poll you see today will be outdated tomorrow. They're going to tighten dramatically. And I just think, you know, keep your eyes on the same states. It's Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Michigan, Arizona. And that's probably where the whole election will get decided. And the other thing, when you see bounces in polls like these in conventions, and you two are smart enough to appreciate this, it's polling nationally. So adding 5 points to the Democratic base coming home in New York, or 6 points to the Democratic base coming home in California, in a lot of ways is irrelevant. So what we really should be watching are the 8-10 battleground states and what that polling looks like in the next couple of weeks. And Wisconsin's lucky because Charles Franklin at Marquette does a great job and is probably one of the best in the country. But he knows Wisconsin so well, he can make adjustments to Waukesha and Dane and Washington County that most national pollsters would not be able to make in Wisconsin. So if you want to figure out where the state of the race is in Wisconsin, you can't do any better than Charles.
So, Scott, to your point, Charles Franklin told me 2 weeks ago on our afternoon show that it is a snapshot in time, and it should just be viewed as that literal, minute snapshot in time. Huffington Post, to your point, also in 2016, famously polled and predicted that Hillary Clinton had a 98% chance on Election Day, they polled and said, of beating Donald Trump. Here's my question for you. Should the media stop reporting on the polling? Is it a useless tool?
No, I think you have to do it. I mean, it's like all those magazines now you see in airport hotels trying to preview the NFL season when nobody knows who's going to break their ankle 3 games in. And I think nobody knows what the defining moments will be in the next debate and some speech Trump gives in Pennsylvania on some remarks, you know, Harris fumbles at a press conference in California. It's a long, long way to go. I think The national political press tends to focus on polls because there's so very little news. I mean, at the end of the day, these two presidential candidates are basically going to give the same speech 3 times a day from here until November. But I think it's worthwhile to watch and to get it. I don't see any problem with polls being reported and the press building stories around them. I just think the public needs to be aware that polling is not what it used to be 40 years ago. It's much more fragile and I think much more flawed. And it doesn't reflect the work the pollsters are doing. All they're really trying to do is to talk to whatever their set of people is, you know, 2,000 or whatever it is. But it's harder and harder to find people, A, and B, it's harder and harder to get people to tell you the straight story.
Scott, I thank you again for being here with us this morning. But if people want to hear more, they can follow you on your podcast, Lost in the Middle. Where is it?
Everywhere you want. I mean, it's on, you know, from Amazon to Apple to Spotify. It's Lost Middle, America's Political Orphans, or they can also find links to it in my columns on scottklug.substack.com. And thanks for having me on so early.
Scott, great to have you always. It's 9:54 on WTMJ.